bullshit. Texas, only steers and queers come from Texas, private cowboy. And you don't much look like a steer to me, so that kind of narrows it down.
No love, trash hog!
Look, I pull up in that drop top, send it in that pop pop, black diamond my Rolex, call that bitch a fat rock. I be on that GT, backed off of that star rock. I been on my feet, bitch, since Cardi called me Dada.
Hi, everybody. It's NOLA Trash Talk, episode 160. It's the Prophet Joshua.
And it's Steve McJeezy.
After a very, very long 2-week break, no episodes, let's see, what were the delays? Weather, work, what else you got there?
Travel. We missed each other, dude.
Travel. So we are back at September 4th, 2017. It is Labor Day. It's a Monday show.
Fucking Labor Day, dude.
Labor Day.
Should be out fucking barbecuing.
Okay, first off, that intro music I got going on.
I'm so happy.
You were digging on that?
Oh, yeah.
That's Lack from back in the Cash Money days.
Yep.
Now he's with Hustle Camp Records, I believe.
Anytime you throw some rap on, you know that I know what it is.
Yeah, so I found that song came up because it came up on a YouTube ad, like an ad before a video I'm watching. And it's the video was the ad, and it just starts.
Oh, wow.
It's a sponsored. It just started playing. I'm looking at it, and it's Central City, and I'm like, "What is?" And it looks straight out of 1998.
Wow.
And he came up with Cash Money. He's a co-writer. I had to look up Lack's biography because he wasn't one of those frontline guys.
Yeah.
He was in the back. Co-wrote Number One Stunner though.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, he did.
I just saw them like, what is this? And they had all the makings.
The Number One Stunner.
It had all the cinematography, if you will.
James Bond, Jackie Chan, and that bitch named MacGyver.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it was all same kind of camera work as the late 90s, early 2000s New Orleans rap stuff. And I was like, what is this? So I went and tracked it down, got the track. And I was like, oh, I got to use this on Trash Talk. This is magical. But this is our first NOLA Trash Talk recording post. Well, I'll say post-Hurricane Harvey, pre-Hurricane Irma.
Oh, fucking Irma, dude. So, I have a very good friend of mine is just got into the JAG program in the Army.
Oh, wait. Before we get into the show.
We got 1,000 things.
Before we get into the show, where are we today? We are recording from downtown New Orleans in an actual legitimate radio studio.
Yeah. We're not in a mid-city setup, which is nice. However, we're actually in a legit radio station, which is, it feels like we belong here, even though we know we do. Like the Prophet, not, all right, let's play this.
No, we don't really belong here. Nobody would pay for this.
No, but the Prophet and I could make a radio podcast / everyday's.
We do.
Like, no, but like every day, though. We could do that, and it would rival some people's garbage.
Yeah,
you know this,
we
man.
We'd like to think that, I guess.
I am fully, like, there's not much I know. I'm not that self-confident, as any of our listeners have heard. I lack in most things, and I'm very self-deprecating. However, I know you and I could murder on the airwaves if we wanted to.
That is the dream. I was on the... on the air all day today was, you know, something else. Hence why we are in a radio studio with the carpet on the walls and everything, soundproofing, the booths, if you will. I want to drop this piece of this knowledge that I got from a caller, not today's shift, but a few shifts ago, calling in about a traffic report. And he's on I-10 East heading out, like, over the high-rise.
Oh, my God.
And he's going over one of those areas out there where the train tracks are. And he said he's on the I-10 heading east. And a train blows its horn, and all the brake lights light up on I-10. Think about that.
I'm sorry, I was taking a sip of Diet Coke. Are you serious?
Think about that.
Holy fuck.
What do these people think? A train's just going to surf across I-10?
And then stop.
Yeah, everyone slammed on the brakes on the highway. And the guy called into the radio station to tell me that.
Do you take those calls?
Yeah,
dude, I'm sorry. I cannot believe I did not know
that.
That
was brilliant.
I cannot believe that I didn't know that you did that because I wish I
see where this is going.
I want to troll you.
Yeah. So coming in on the hurricane tangent, you're talking about a buddy of yours, I guess, who got rained on once.
Johnny boy, he's now a JAG in the Army, and he is coming from Charlottesville.
Ooh, topical.
All the way to El Paso, where he is stationed for 3 years. And if you look at a map, there's only one way to get to El Paso from there.
Oh, yeah.
You can try to take the hypotenuse all you want. However, the straightest way to go is down and over.
Yes.
And if old fucking Irma hits, dude, that's going to be a problem for him.
Well, we don't know if Irma's going Gulf
East,
of Mexico
West,
or...
Yeah, exactly. Could go
anywhere. I do like the people constantly freaking out about, like, wanting to know, what are we going to do with Irma when it's just way too early to tell? And you don't seem to understand how...
I'm like, look, the Army will understand if you get stuck here. They will.
Oh, I'm kind of... I've already been pitching some Irma evacuation plans if it came into the Gulf and it was like, I don't know, by the time it gets there, like a Category 8.
Dude, they say it's going to be like the biggest storm ever.
Wherever it does hit. I was kind of fingers crossed hoping it hit like central Georgia. And
just smoke everything.
And just annihilate Atlanta. We could rename it Hurricane Sherman or something. That's my hope. But, I mean, at first... We can't prognosticate this nonsense. No one knows. But we're post Harvey, and Harvey, I think, it's been talked to death. I think it's way worse financially than Katrina.
Oh, absolutely.
With the sheer amount of people and property involved, they got like 500,000 cars that are abandoned. So in the next year, folks, check them Carfax, and make sure that shit wasn't in the Texas area in late summer 2017.
What was your favorite storyline?
You might have some rust issues.
What was your favorite storyline of Hurricane Harvey?
I've been in Houston, like a lot of people can say. I've been in Houston during thunderstorms where shit floods because it's a floodplain. And I'm comparing the two cities. We have levees and pumping systems purposely, I mean, of course, not kept up to speed. But they exist there because we're underwater in a bowl.
Right.
Houston, I don't know what Houston's approach is to that, because it always floods when I'm there and people just kind of accept it. Now, of course, when you drop 50 inches in a single go, you're going to have problems. But, like, I'm looking at the water levels on the news even today, and I'm thinking to myself, I think the water's just staying there. I think that's just a new swamp.
No, it's
that. Well, it's like I don't see the water draining anywhere. It's just there now.
Well, that's what happened with Katrina, is that the water stayed stagnant for a month, and that's why there was so much damage.
But our flooding was for infrastructure failures.
Right.
Not because it didn't have anywhere to go.
Well,
it had somewhere to go. It just those things were broken.
Correct.
Or a barge smashed into them.
In Houston, like, they've industrialized so much of the city that, like, when you start paving stuff, you take away the natural, you know.
And I was surprised. I mean, when you look at New Orleans Interstate,
flooding time.
It all goes, it's up pretty high. Like, you can stand on like the spillway and whatnot, like a lot of people did in parked cars on Katrina evacuations, and you're dry. Houston, the two roads into Houston, I-10 and 45, where they intersect in downtown Houston, completely underwater.
Oh, wow.
And your two major highways... Why aren't they up?
Do you know his favorite?
But whatever, I can't.
So,
it's just one of those things.
Did you have a good? Did you have any favorite storylines from there?
I mean, I had friends out there that were sending me photos of what they were seeing. I had a friend who lives across from the Reliant Center or NRG Stadium, and sending me pictures of it just, you know, pretty flooded out. And we were piecing together, like, what's going to happen with that LSU game. And eventually, it came to the Superdome, and Joshua did some disaster profiteering off of that one. Thanks, LSU.
There's blood in the streets, man.
There you go. But 97% of Houston in the middle of that storm never lost power. And that's something that ain't going to happen here. It rains hard here. Half the city drops power.
I think that's probably my favorite storyline that you've said. But, my 1A to that is Mr. Olstein's...
not letting people into the church or saying it wasn't open.
That, to me, is so funny.
I mean, to me, that was... Oh, shitty behavior from a professional holy salesman.
Like, are you kidding me, man?
Like, how do you still...
Do you know how much of a, like, how much he could profit by actually doing the right thing? by doing the right thing and like spending a bunch of money, he could actually profit more than what he did.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh, completely. Yeah, understand that. But
like, spend $5 million. Okay.
And that was a stadium that was converted into a mega church.
Right. So they have room, and it's up. It's lifted up. It's high.
I don't understand how, since we're post-1980s with all those preachers getting busted for, like, sex with a hooker or all these other corruption things, and, like, mega pastors and super churches were kind of laughed out.
Not his.
And no, it's still a thing. You go up to the south and center of the country, and the mega church thing, It's like the whole church pedophilia thing. It didn't dent the church's armor at all.
Right. And I know that there's a board of directors that makes decisions with him. I get that. But if I was him.
He was probably thinking it was just going to go away
right.
after a couple days.
It
just turned out to be a massive
disaster. All he had
disaster.
To do was do the right thing, and he could have profited more. Like, all right, let's say he spends $5 million. He gets all the supplies. He gets people in. They're grimy as fuck. They're disgusting. We know it. Who cares? Your building gets fucking dilapidated because fucking people.
Yeah, but then at that point, you get money too.
Exactly. That's where I'm going with that. You televise the fuck out of that, and your audiences over the entire world would donate, how much you think? 3 or 4 or 5, 10 times
yeah,
5 million.
Yeah, rebuild our mega church.
Exactly. They absolutely would. And he could have, again, like, he thought it was going to go away. Like, our churches are flooded, blah, blah, and it's, like, dry as shit. He could have done the right thing. He could have been a good fella and made money at the same time. But what he decided to do?
Bail.
Exactly. And you know this son of a bitch got money, too.
Yeah. I think all he had to do was stay out of the news and stay off Twitter. And just keep his head in the sand for a while. And
nope.
Yeah.
It ain't.
Well, that's his plan.
Well,
when do you think his next public appearance is going to be?
Oh, a long time from now.
Oh, it's going to be a carefully plotted
Harvey
relief
yes.
super event. So, yeah, we have the Harvey thing. So that's going down in Houston. Everyone's underwater. 6 million people. Just, it's a shit show. Meanwhile, we shut out the Texans in a preseason game and send them packing back to their non-home.
Fuck out of here.
And now who's being the hero out there in Texas? JJ.
Well, he's doing the right thing.
Yeah. Who's going to run for office after he retires?
Exactly.
Boom.
And he's spending some money. He's probably spent about, what, like $1-2 million of his own money?
Well, I think he's donated way more than that.
Or that. Let's say he spent the five.
Or whatever he's raising on
okay.
top of it.
Let's say he personally spent the five that I just talked about. His brand is now 10 times better than it was.
See, we're looking at it from like, you could have done so much to help these people, but you could have also made a lot of money for yourself.
I'm going from a practical point of view. No one is that much of a philanthropist.
I could see Steven. I mean, I'd be in the same way. So we're out there stacking sandbags in front of like a nursing home in Houston. Oh, we really thank you guys for coming out and helping. It's like, hey, just increasing brand value here.
That's all we're doing, baby.
You guys really don't need any water, or you don't need any money or anything.
People hate when I say that.
No, we just want people to think we're better than we actually are.
People hate when I say it, but I'm like, there's something about doing community service where, like, if you're trying to do like business networking, community service is the way to go. Why? Because at a minimum, if you're out there, the people that are also out there with you, at a minimum, they think this guy can't be that much of a scumbag.
It's a perfect.
But really. You are.
I would think for us to be the most jaded.
Your guard is down.
The most jaded, skeptical people over here, you'd think the person doing the most community service is hiding the most.
Correct.
That's why your pedophiles tend to be those most holiest of holy. I mean, it's a dead giveaway, though. Either your priests or your assistant coaches on the,
right.
on the Little League team who's volunteering his time.
Right.
And you think, man, what a great guy. Ah. I mean, that's kind of a tangent to what we're saying. But the best way to cover shitty behavior or a shitty personality would be to volunteer.
Yep.
And just be a strong figure in the community.
I'm telling you.
Nobody. That's.
I look at the scumbag. I volunteer a lot. And I like, I look at the scumbags out there and I'm like, I know who you are. It takes one to know one.
I've always. There's a friend of ours who's up to some psycho behavior sometimes. You know, you're drinking too much meltdowns.
Yes.
And someone has said, oh, he's a total psycho. And I was like, no. No, we don't want to give psychopaths a bad name by calling the drunk freakout guy, a psycho. The psycho is the nice guy in the community that all the neighbors, you know, oh, I never really saw him, but we wave, say hi to each other, and then they find like six beheaded women.
Arlington Road, buried
in the backyard. That's the psycho, the guy who never flipped out, the guy who never raised his voice to anyone.
You never seen that movie?
No.
Arlington Road with Jeff Bridges is about that very thing. It's they have a house in like the Washington D.C.
Wait,
area.
Are we saying that everyone who volunteered to help with Hurricane Harvey is a psychopath?
No, not at all. But you can kind of see him out there. Anyway, but Jeff Bridges is
kind of like when our president's out at the soup kitchen line, handing out bowls of food to all the people staying
Stop.
In the.
Stop.
Oh Jesus!
Stop.
I mean, it's nice. He has to do that, but also you just got to feel so empty when you do that kind of photo op shit. Even if he was doing it for 6 hours. It's still a photo op.
I mean,
and a soundbite.
It sucks because you would like to have he or she politician do that on the low, but because you're so high profile, you have to have a Secret Service there or your security, and you have to let people know you're coming because, you know, so it's like it sucks. But I wish there was a way that they could do that shit on the slick, you know?
They got to get that jackass makeup and go out as a completely hidden person and do it.
Dirty Grandpa. Hey, did you hear about our ladies from Tennessee?
Our ladies from Tennessee?
The second most, quote, wanted people in Tennessee history were caught in New Orleans.
Oh, is this the guy
today?
Oh, no. What was this? Please hit me with the news. And for once, Steven has the news.
Kobe.
He gets to read it to me, and I can react.
Right. So, article starts off, second most wanted Tennessee fugitive caught in Palmer Park in New Orleans.
Ooh.
And that was today. 4 days after authorities in New Orleans caught a Tennessee man wanted for attempted murder and kidnapping.
That was the Rouse's bust.
He was
shoplifting. Yeah.
Then his girlfriend, who was being sought out in connection with the same crime, was apprehended at Palmer Park. And the U.S. Marshals dude,
ooh,
they came.
That's big.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I was about to say, Tommy Lee was in town?
Tommy Lee Jones in town. And they took old Michaela Stillwell, arrested and booked Sunday night. And they took her to, you down with OPP? Yeah, you know me.
Okay, so...
So this is interesting.
It's kind of an anticlimactic end to being a most wanted.
Yeah.
You got what you want? I want the shootout.
Well, here you go. Do you know where the 400 block of North Carrollton is? Right around the corner from where we normally broadcast.
Yeah, of course.
A New Orleans Police Department officer arrested one of the assailants.
By the way, that guy who got busted in Rouse's was the Mid-City Rouse's, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
Yep. Thursday, after he was caught trying to steal from a grocery store on the 400 block of North Carrollton. That was Rouse's. And that's how they got down to the girlfriend and everything else, which is funny. So I found that mildly amusing. In other news, we've picked up the Bourbon Street. We're going back to Bourbon Street.
We are.
They stopped the construction.
But now we're going again.
They're finishing the first four blocks.
And then that's it?
And then they're going to reevaluate everything else.
Ah, but
you
is that
be
but is
shitting
that
me.
But is that four first four blocks? Is that what's scheduled to be done in 2018, or are they going to just sew up the blocks now and be done by like out of there by Christmas?
They're finishing the first four, by Christmas.
Okay, all right.
And the rest of it is like up for grabs, but it's a shit show, complete shit show because. They thought it was going to be how much for... They thought it was going to be like $6 million for 12 blocks. No. It's $13 million for four.
Ooh. So do the math times three.
Not good.
How does it... I was thinking, how could the city possibly afford... And then I saw, cameras. More cameras.
That's right. Also, quote by the mayor's office, the fact that... It was going to take $6 million to do the whole project. The fact that it's going to be 13 just to do, like, the first four blocks is a moot point.
Oh.
Moot point.
A moot point.
Yep. That's actually in an article. That's the official statement.
You know what? Since it's such a clusterfuck right now, it only makes sense that he should stop it because he's out of office.
Right.
He won't have to deal with it.
He won't.
So by the time they, you know, it's done at Christmas and they reevaluate the remaining box on bourbon, by the time that whole process, which I'm sure will take half of 2018, he's gone.
Yep.
So
he got his tricentennial mayorship ending, and off you go.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to delay it for sure after the tricentennial. The next shovel won't hit asphalt on bourbon until way after. Well, that's May.
May,
the official,
yeah.
So
you know it. And you know, that's what makes me so happy is that he will not take any questions about this.
Because he doesn't have to.
Exactly. It's like, do you remember when
he just has to deflect for 8 months, 9 months?
Not that we love George Bush on this program, but do you remember George Bush's like last year in office? You did not even hear a peep from that motherfucker. The country's falling apart. Like, the banks are fucking getting bailed out.
Oh, that was 08.
And yeah, you didn't hear. I did not see him in 2008, maybe like four times.
He didn't have to do anything. He was all the hubbub back then over Obama running.
Right.
Complete
overshadowed
people,
him.
People thought that when Obama won the election, he was president. They forget there's like 3 months, there's two and a half months, that other guy's still there.
Yeah, and you can just do whatever you want.
Or getting your last minute judges
pardons
in,
pardons,
and, yeah, and start pardoning all the people. Yep. All the stuff that no one can judge you for because you're done.
Oh, yeah, you're done.
Senioritis, if you will, for the president.
Oh, yes. And there was talks of when Obama left office last December of him pardoning our favorite Mayor Nagin. And that almost happened, but that would have tarnished Obama's speaking record track. Because you know how, like, when you get out of office, your payment for getting in, you know?
So what poor son
your payment is now.
So where
you get to speak for $100,000 shot.
Well, talking about people leaving office and people coming in, what's our mayor race looking like? What schlub is going to inherit Mayor Mitch's clusterfuck Bourbon Street?
The judge.
The judge.
Judge Charbonnet.
That's who's
looking like going to be the favorite. And quite frankly, if I was Miss Desiree, the Honorable Desiree Chardonnay, I would say, fuck it. I ain't doing this shit.
Oh, just.
What can you. You can't accomplish dick coming into what is being left for you. You can't.
Right.
And you're going to look like the asshole because you're going to walk into.
I hope she takes the shittiest street in the city, finds it, probably out in Lakeview, maybe the East, and renames it Landry Lane.
Oh, that would be amazing.
If she does one thing immediately. Lasting legacy.
If the folks.
And even misspell it so it's not exactly what the family is, but
it'd
just put
like
it out there.
Landrew.
Yeah.
Landrew. Stupid fucking motherfucker.
Well, this is the worst. So we haven't done this in 2 weeks, and while the storm was hitting Texas and everybody was dying out there, where were you, Steven?
I'm going back to Cali.
I want to big league all of us with your tales of Northern California.
Well, I have a dear friend.
Because the rest of us were sweating it out, working for a living.
Yeah, like that time you went to L.A. and left me here.
Working.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. You were working. That's right. Well, I went to Northern California, and I went to Santa Clara. With a dear friend of mine, lives out there, guy I graduated high school with. He's a genius.
Now, I heard a rumor that this was possibly going to happen when you went out there. Was there any golf played out there?
There was almost, yes.
Was almost, and it didn't happen. Now, I'm bringing this up, obviously, for the listeners, because this is not just your typical.
Right. All right. So, a friend of mine works in a hospital in the surgery unit, and the chief surgeon there offered to have
prepare for the big league in 3, 2, 1
offered to have he and I driven out to Pebble Beach and play the course on his dime.
Yeah, so this is what I thought was happening out there on Steve's trip as to why we couldn't record. So I'm watching Texas slowly sink and I'm thinking, and that piece of shit's out there playing Pebble Beach for free.
Yep.
Like, how are we going to do a show now? None of this is relatable.
It isn't.
I'm going to have to shoot myself in the foot.
So there was a part of me that was like, this is an awesome experience. You should do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The other part of me, which is the smarter part sometimes, says that you do not belong on that course. Like, there's, I've stepped on a basketball court.
You sound like a minority trying to get into the Metairie Country Club.
I've stepped on basketball courts, and I've looked around and said, Steve, you don't belong here.
Jesus.
I've done it before.
Talk about being hard on yourself.
Yeah. And
we're in a professional radio studio right now. Are you feeling like you don't belong here?
No, I belong here. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you got to own it.
I'm good here.
Do you feel like that when you're doing taxes?
Sometimes.
I belong here.
When, I had a meeting with a couple of lawyers one time, and they were like, buddy, blah, code section, blah, blah. What do you think about that, Steve? I'm like, what is it?
Well, from the 3-point line, you answered his question.
I agree. I'm like,
oh.
I'm sorry. I'm such an idiot. What is Leonardo DiCaprio when he's doing Catch Me If You Can and he's the surgeon? What did he say? He's like,
I got nothing for
God
you.
God damn it. He's like, he looks at the other surgeon. He's like, I agree. Uh-huh. Like, that's all I did. Shit. But anyway, so I very humbly said, I cannot step on this course because I don't want to embarrass you. And period, because I'm embarrassing myself.
So the opportunity was, so it's not that the plans got interrupted. You turned down the offer.
Yes. So what he said was, I completely understand. And what I'll do is I'll set you guys up with lunch there and you can have lunch overlooking the 18th hole there. And don't worry about a check.
So that's what you did?
That's what we did.
Oh, okay.
We had a very heterosexual lunch.
All right, you still... yeah, this is really...
No, is it...
Dudes, just like paying for dudes' lunches.
You know...
Overlooking Pebble Beach.
I just know.
18 holes.
I just know. I mean, I guess when you make, you know, over $1 million a year and you're a surgeon, you don't give a shit about anything. But my buddy's such a good worker that this guy, like, loves him. He's like, you know, he was telling me, like, hey, my buddy's coming in town. Blah, blah. He's like, oh, do you guys want to go play Pebble? And immediately he said yes without talking to me because he thinks I'm adventurous. But I know what it's like to embarrass yourself on a golf course, and I'm not doing it on Pebble Beach.
Is there any place in New Orleans that you walk into where you're like, oh, I don't belong here?
No.
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 Nothing's too big?
Nope.
Like you feel like you're out of place?
Never. Ever.
Okay. All right.
I was at one thing the other night, and I thought to myself, are these people better than you? No, they're not.
I don't know, man. There's some royal families in this city.
Shit.
Yeah, they certainly do their best to make the rest of us feel like shit.
Royale with cheese. They're nothing but a bunch of fucking quarter pounders, man.
All right. Okay.
Pulp Fiction.
I'll remember this next time I try to get into the Metairie Country Club.
Now
Steven said it's okay, guys.
That's in Metairie. You said in this town.
Okay.
Yeah, the Metairie Country Club is for people that don't enjoy black folks.
I just want to mention that when we're doing these shows with delays between episodes, that I always go back to busy, busy tax season in March and April where Steve's super busy, and he always says, 2 years in a row now, dude, once tax season's over, I'm wide open, plenty of time for shows throughout the summer.
True.
And then every week it really is like a 55-yard field goal. Of just like, are we doing it or are we not doing it? Up to the very end to get a show out weekly.
I don't think so.
Scheduling. I mean, it feels like we're Indiana Jones sliding under the closing rock door.
Right.
In terms of like our schedules crossing in the night.
Well, that's different. That's
and more often than not, it's like you have shit going on and I'm trying to like get you free for an hour to knock it out.
True, but like,
and I'm just thinking of how you promised all this free time post tax season, and here we just made it through the summer, and we're like up against it every week.
Well, we're trying to configure our schedules, and I understand that you are free a lot of the time.
However, you're the only person. Summer in New Orleans is busy.
Well, you're right. I also have a spouse. That plays.
Here we go. With this again.
No, but we can get him in. We can actually get him in a lot easier when I am more proactive on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
Oh, that's not gonna work.
I know. But what I did was I put in my calendar reminder on Wednesday morning to text the prophet.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Because it's like, if I think about it on Wednesday, it's like, oh, you know what? I can plan the next 3 days or 4 days, and then we can figure it out. But if it's like Friday night and I'm like 10 deep, I'm like, oh, Jesus. So it's just more planning.
Yeah, drinking definitely plays a huge part in whether or not shows happen.
I mean, just more planning is required. And I'll say on my part, because it has been said ad nauseum that you have plenty of time.
But I work all the time, too.
Exactly.
Now, this said, let's back it up, because this is the big local New Orleans thing. Football's back. We can officially distract ourselves from statues and Bourbon Street construction and hurricanes, I guess, if Irma decides to sweep east. Yeah. Reason why I don't have free time, because I was at the LSU game working
who?
On Saturday. I was at that Saints game on Thursday. I was on that prior Saints game on the earlier Saturday.
Right, so fall, you know, and it's kind of summer.
Working all between those events, too.
It's a little bit different for you, too. Yeah, I mean, it is. But it's nice to be employed, though.
But I want to bring this up, because I overheard this on another radio show. It was a hypothetical question posed to the audience that it's kind of existential, and it gives you something to think about. What if there was no football? How different
would this
region or just the country?
Everybody.
No, but like think of it if it just never existed, not if it was gone tomorrow. I mean, that's even scary. If the NFL was canceled and there was no season, if they striked and there was no season.
There's somebody's dad in this room who happens to be a minister who would think that more people would be in church.
Well, it was asking people, if there was no football, like, what would you do? And I was thinking, that's why I said existential. I mean, think of how many people's entire lives this time of year, or even looking forward to this time of year, where their mental energy, not at their jobs, is thinking about football, talking about conversations at the bar with their friends about football, their pro team or their college team. And the endless conjecture, watching the game, talking about the game, endless conjecture would be a great name of a sports show.
Oh my
show.
God!
Ugh, making bets on the game. Like, if you took that away from people, where would all that energy go? And I don't think people would suddenly be doing more, start hiking and riding horses and exercising and CrossFit and picking up more hobbies.
I think you see a lot of more tiki torches.
Everybody would funnel their football energy into political protest.
Right.
It's likely more tiki torches.
Oh, I love how people...
I gotta say, maybe in that sense that the hubbub when football season comes around every fall, that really keeps the world safe from that political nonsense.
I think it does. Because
all that energy gets channeled into hating Atlanta instead of hating your neighbor.
And I have seen more interracial hugging.
That's true.
Seen in my entire life at a Saints game. I think a lot of people, if you were in the black and gold, and like there's another fan that comes up to you and starts some shit with you, the amount of people that are sitting around you that will be like, "Screw this guy," happens to be a lot. And I see it all the time, which is where we have coined the phrase, the only place where race relations are great is 12 to 3 down on Porter Street, man. Because
trying to think, though, like, is that because they're aligned towards the same goal in cheering for someone or cheering against someone else?
Well, it's the same thing as politics. It's like,
it's the enemy of my enemy, my friend.
Exactly. You have your guy or your gal, and it's professional sports again. It's not like, oh, well, let's have the conversation. The Saints are so great because they have blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. Like, they don't have the conversation. It's just like, look, you came here to watch a game at our house. Shut your mouth. Like, if you're getting your ass kicked, we're going to give you shit. Like, that's what a part of going to a game is all about. But, like, in a political analogy, it's like everybody just rooting for their team.
Now I got another question to ask here, because I endured my first LSU game.
Oh, God.
I guess, for this whatever advocate.
They're good, man.
Yeah, you know, okay. Conjecture. Yeah. Endless conjecture. But I feel like I didn't see it at Death Valley, so it doesn't count.
No, it does not count.
Right.
Because Death Valley holds like .102. Like, it holds 102,000 people.
So I can't say I saw LSU play because that's not, like, I can't cross it off the bucket list.
No.
I gotta
not
go.
At all. You got to go.
Yeah. And that tailgating, though, all that LSU tailgating transplanted to the CBD for
really?
That game. And as I walked through the
CBD. Wanted to see the fucking case for decadence.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen any decadence action.
Oh, well, the Mormons stayed away.
Oh. That's what I was wondering. What a culture shock for someone to get off a plane from
and
Utah.
And the Bayou people?
Yeah.
And the Coonasses? Who would never come?
I feel they would
never come here.
I know. There's still that boycott New Orleans thing because of the statues.
Of course.
But no, as I walk through the CBD, these are some observations. Like, the LSU tailgate and the people occupying in front of bars and whatnot, from one end of the CBD over here at the Regions building all the way to the Dome, I saw a lot more action out on the streets versus what I see during Saints games. And then, observation number two, when the game was over and I'm trying to get the fuck out of there and walk through the crowd and get back to my car, that LSU crowd, I guess, versus the Saints crowd is just younger because they were they were booking it walking. Like, I was walking through this mass of people.
Really?
And I was shocked at how fast everyone was moving, because then when I'm leaving a Saints game, I'm, like, navigating around, like, you know, Billy and Betty, you know, 350 each, like a wall of them, and I'm trying to get around so I can get back to my side of the city. And the LSU game, I guess because, I know older people go to the LSU games too, but it was all college kids.
Oh, whoa.
It was just faster foot traffic getting out.
I would imagine that is because a lot of people from LSU are not used to, quote, New Orleans, and they think it's a very dangerous city. So when the game let out, it was probably close to midnight, huh?
Yeah.
12:15. So they were like, 12:15. Fuck it, we got to book it out of here, and like, there's not.
It didn't seem like that, though. It seemed like everybody was going to party.
Oh, okay.
But in general, the crowd, everyone walked faster than Saints fans leaving a game.
Yeah, I think, because I think there definitely is an older crowd, number one.
But good God, those poor people from Utah being exposed to not only New Orleans, but Decadence Weekend.
I think they stayed in their freaking
hotels. You don't think they went and had a taste of culture?
No.
You know who I was happy to see at that LSU game, by the way? Good old Jim McMahon.
Oh, your boy.
From the 80s
your
Bears. Good
boy.
Old suicidal Jim McMahon. You may remember him as the quarterback that would dive headfirst on his QB sneaks, who has made a post-football career of complaining about concussions and trying to sue the NFL.
Yes, also a quarterback who went to the White House and wore the wrong jersey.
No. That's a cool story. I like that story. That's a baller story.
Bullshit.
In 1986, Super Bowl, held here in the Superdome, where he went on the radio and was misquoted as calling all the people in New Orleans rednecks and whores. It took a lot of flack for it.
In the 80s, that could have been true.
It wasn't actually his quote. But, you know, good old Jim McMahon went to BYU. So, of course, he was.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't know how a guy like that went to college at BYU.
I forgot about that.
No, imagine a dude like that going to college at BYU.
Oh, my God.
What the hell was he up to?
That must have been the only program that offered him anything.
Well, no, his off-field behavior. How the hell?
But he's not a Mormon now.
No, I'm saying, how the fuck did he go to that Mormon college in the early 80s?
What I'm
70s?
Saying is that must have been the only program that offered him a scholarship, because why else would you? I would play four string at freaking McNeese State.
This would be the equivalent of us being like, oh yeah, the college Dennis Rodman went to was like a Mormon school.
That's ridiculous.
But anyway, he was there for BYU on the field as one of like the guest team captains, and I was like, I was thrilled. I was like, oh shit, Jim McMahon.
I thought the
that's
only,
an OG.
I thought the only quarterback that went to BYU was Steve Young, like the one that was. I can't believe that I swing and miss McMahon.
That's one of those things. It's like private schools pump out the sluttier chicks. Those Mormon colleges pump out those professional bad boy athletes, apparently.
I fucking hate BYU so much.
That makes the, like that versus like Tebow going to Florida and being the Christian good old boy.
Well, he's from Jacksonville, and he's from the area, so like
but
it made sense.
But you understand, like, it's the same thing. Like, Jim McMahon should have been the Florida party guy.
I guess so,
Tebow
yeah.
should be at BYU, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, you're right. Tebow he was such a G. He like lived that life, man. Like,
I guess if that's being a G,
I watched it
by Steven standards.
It's just so hard. Like, I watched it happen with my own two eyes. Buddy's like, oh, that's Tebow over there at a house party with broads everywhere.
And not sleeping with the girl who was his girlfriend, who broke up with him because of that, right?
Nope.
Which could be.
Yes.
Which is
that
just,
actually happened? Which, yes.
Well, I was going to say either that happened or that's just good PR.
No, that's what happened. And but what I'm saying is I hate BYU.
Tebow could probably replace Joel Osteen.
He could. I'd go.
Done.
I'd go.
You know, Tebow would have helped the Hurricane Harvey people out. He would have opened up his mega church.
I think he'll always be fine because he could just open a wing shack in Gainesville.
He's
says,
done.
Tebow's
brand
wings.
Management.
Boom.
I'm thinking him opening a mega church, and you're opening up a wing shop.
Yeah, Tebow's wings in Gainesville. Tebow, put all your memorabilia up. You'll never, ever, ever starve. Ever.
That's, yeah, I guess.
But do you know why I hate BYU?
Why do you hate BYU?
Because several years ago, they had a player on their team. His name is Jimmer Fredette. We call him the Great White Hope because he could hit shots from the snack bar.
Right.
BYU is ready to roll in a tournament. However, their second best player, sophomore, decided that he was going to have a spot of Earl Grey tea, which has caffeine in it. And you can't have caffeine if you're a Mormon, apparently.
Ooh.
So they suspended him for the fucking tournament.
And this is, once again, I go back to how the hell did Jim McMahon go to, go to BYU?
Actually, he was caught in another dorm of the opposite sex. But well, just walking out. But,
with caffeine in his system.
Right. But then we found out the list of things that could get you suspended from BYU, and one of them was like tea. You can't have caffeine.
Are they allowed to take ibuprofen for aches and pains?
Again, I wanted to burn that school because BYU is ready to roll.
Wow. And they so he's their best player?
He was the second best player, and like he had to sit out for the tournament. And now he had to sit out for the tournament. He didn't even make it to the league because they suspended him for the rest of the season. And I think he was like, I don't even want to play here anymore.
That's like New Orleans closing Bourbon Street right before a major festival.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just shut it down.
Who the hell's in charge?
But yeah, so they couldn't. They don't. But that's like a respectful thing by BYU because, like, if you don't follow their policies, doesn't matter who you are, you're going to sit. But I always feel like, you know what? If the guy does a lot for university, you know, PR-wise, just let him play. Suspend him next season, you know?
Speaking of which, Willie Snead suspended three games with that DUI back in June. Good on the Saints organization for, like, keeping that on the DL.
They tried to, but, I mean, come on.
Back in June, though, we didn't hear anything about this.
Well, it's always
BAC of .125. Not that impressive, but still solid.
It's always the arresting officer. They're like, they really have the decision of what to report and what to not report. And then if they call it in, you know, you call it in, and then Mickey Loomis gets the call, and you're like, hey, Mick, look, we got one of your kids here. Like, let's not make this a big deal. Look, we're going to take him in.
You get off pretty easy. I mean, you're a pro athlete. You got the money to just, like, pay the 10 grand straight away and then do some community service.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but we're not really a state with the 10 grand flat.
Oh, it's
California
less,
is.
It's less than that. I think you can,
Louisiana, I know you can make some phone calls to that lieutenant governor.
Yeah, I think
you can get out of that.
I think you can get that shit expunged for like three. Expunged.
Yeah.
If you're like a first time offender.
Yeah, if you have a clean slate and it's the first time, yeah, you can. Sir, and that's poor NFL players who have to, once again, brand management.
Right. But again, it always makes me think, it's like, dude, I get that you want to roll up to the Lambo in the club in L.A. However, you're in New Orleans, and you can buy, like, you can get an Uber black car.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Anywhere you want to go, and cheap.
I don't make that much money, but when I was, like, my last big weekend was partying in L.A. in July, and I had, like, 25 Uber charges
right
after that weekend. Just why not? It why is this so difficult? If you got $1 million in the bank,
why?
I have
doing
a driver
this?
Pretty much on call every weekend. That's at
what
that
I would,
point.
That's what I would do, right? You would have a driver on call, and like he gets a DUI, and you're like, man, like, I don't know. Once Uber got introduced, I was like, anybody that gets Deweys are just morons. But you know.
But the Saints will be back a week from now, so the next time you hear NOLA Trash Talk will either be just before that Monday Night Football game. Or hopefully not after. Hopefully don't.
No, before.
Okay.
Before.
We're going hard.
Football's back, so everybody's going to love each other again. This is 1-6 in all the trash talk. I'm the Prophet Joshua.
Stephen Jesus.
This is the last. Yo, see you later.